Have you printed out the free coloring sheet for this lesson? You can download and print it at the link in our show notes. And you can access full lesson activity guides, bonus videos, nature devotions, and our themed Bible and nature scavenger hunts in the Nat Theo Club. When you join, you receive new resources every week and access to all our back content. Dive deeper into God's creation and the Bible in the Nat Theo Club at erinlynham.com/club or at the link in our show notes.
Hello world, wake me up to another good morning, time to go.
Are you ready to explore God's wild and wonderful world? Welcome to the Nat Theo Podcast. I'm your host, Erin Lynham. I'm a certified master naturalist, Bible teacher, and author, and I am so excited to dive into God's written word, the Bible, and his created world with you. Have you ever really wanted to know the answer to something? Has there ever been a mystery that you just cannot get out of your mind? The creature we are discovering today has been a mystery since before Jesus lived on earth. The very first scientists were incredibly confused by this creature, and scientists have worked hard for over 2,000 years trying to understand it, only to be faced with more questions. What is this mysterious creature that has fooled scientists for over 2,000 years? The eel. Here is our trail map.
Are you ready?
We are going to answer the question, are all eels electric? And what is the great eel question? We will discover how do eels have babies? How do eels grow up? Where do baby eels hatch from? And finally, how did God make living creatures? Before we hit the trail, let's thank our sponsor who made this lesson possible, the Answers Bible Curriculum by Answers in Genesis. Families, are you ready to explore the Bible like never before? With the Answers Bible Curriculum for Homeschool by Answers in Genesis, your whole family can journey through the entire Bible chronologically in just 4 years. Kids, imagine learning amazing true stories, memorizing scripture, and discovering how every part of the Bible fits together. Parents and grandparents, you will love how easy it is. One teacher guide covers all grades from kindergarten to fifth grade, so everyone learns together. Plus, the Answers Bible curriculum is packed with apologetics, helping your kids understand and defend their faith. Journey through the Bible together in your home. Visit answersbookstore.com/Bible or the link in our show notes to get started today. It's time for our trivia question. How many years does an eel live for in the wild? Take a guess and we will find out at the end of today's lesson. And Nat Theo Club members, after this lesson, make sure to click over to the bonus video. You will discover how to become a science researcher and make your own project by drawing a map and taking notes. And hear the story of a research project that my kids and I did in nature. You can find that bonus video in the show notes or in your Nat Theo Club dashboard. Listeners, if you would like access to our weekly bonus videos, full lesson activity guides, nature devotions, and summer Bible and nature scavenger hunts, you can access all of that in the Nat Theo Club at the link in our show notes. When we think about an eel, we often picture a mysterious, maybe even creepy creature lurking in the water, giving sudden electric shocks to others who swim by. But that is not exactly a true or complete picture of eels. In fact, electric eels are not actually eels at all. Does that surprise you? Sometimes things in nature are not what they seem, especially when they are named after another creature that looks similar. Electric eels have eel in their name because they look like the creature we are learning about today, true eels. Now, don't worry, we'll learn all about electric eels next week. But this week, we are learning about true eels, which are not electric. But I promise you, they are fascinating. And one thing that makes them so interesting is their mysterious story and how scientists have worked incredibly hard searching the depths of oceans and conducting careful lab work for over 2,000 years in search of an answer to the great eel question. So no, not all eels are electric. In fact, no true eels are electric. But next week, we will discover the amazing creature confusingly called the electric eel that is electric. Today, we are discovering true eels. Specifically, we are learning about the American eel and the European eel, which are very similar. These true eels are a type of fish that look kind of like a snake with long, slithery bodies. They are very smooth and also very slimy because they are covered in mucus. If you have listened to Lesson 61, where we discovered why slugs are slimy, you might remember that slugs are covered in a protective slime called mucus. It's very similar with true eels. Their slimy mucus covering helps protect them from tiny, harmful parasites or bacteria. Their mucus also helps them slip through narrow spaces underwater, like between rocks and coral. Mucus can also help protect the eel when it is out of the water. That's right. Eels, which are a type of fish, can be out of the water for hours. We'll learn more about that when we discover the amazing journey that eels take during their lifetime. So now we know a little bit about true eels, but you might still have questions like I did. And those questions might be the same questions that scientists have asked since before the time that Jesus lived on Earth. So why are eels so mysterious? And what is the great eel question? Listeners, as we journey through this incredible story, don't worry about remembering all the names of the scientists or the dates. Those are important, and I encourage you to study them more closely. However, as you listen right now, I hope you will simply be inspired by the curiosity of scientists over thousands of years that drove them to find answers and better understand God's amazing designs in eels. People have known about and been curious about eels for a very long time. Let's journey back to around the year 350 BC. That is about 350 years before Jesus came to Earth. It was around 2,375 years ago. That's a long time ago. This is the time when a man named Aristotle studied eels. You might have heard about Aristotle before. Aristotle was a smart man who lived a long time ago in ancient Greece. He loved to learn about everything, including animals, plants, stars, and how everything works. He was a very curious scientist, and he asked a lot of questions to try to understand the world. People still remember Aristotle today because he helped us learn how to study and explore. One thing that puzzled Aristotle about eels is that he could not find eel eggs or baby eels. When he looked at, say, a bird, he could easily see if the bird was a male or a boy, or a female, a girl. And he could see bird eggs and watch them hatch and understand where baby birds come from. But it was very different with eels. He could not figure out where eels come from. This puzzling problem was the beginning of what science has called the Great Eel Question. As we journey through this story, led by the curiosity of many scientists throughout time, we will find that the great eel question has changed over time as scientists learned more about eels, but still had many questions. Questions that remain unanswered to today. Let's discover what puzzled Aristotle so much. How do eels have babies? Because Aristotle couldn't find eel eggs or baby eels, he made up a pretty wild idea about where they came from. Aristotle believed that eels came straight from the mud. No mom or dad eel, no eggs, no hatching babies. He thought they just appeared from the mud. Aristotle was not the only one with a wild idea about where eels come from. There was another man who lived about 2,000 years ago, during the time of Jesus, named Pliny the Elder. Pliny the Elder was another natural historian, one of the very first scientists. He loved to collect facts and stories about animals, plants, rocks, and faraway lands. He wrote a big book called Natural History that's like a giant encyclopedia of everything he knew. Although Pliny the Elder knew a whole lot about nature, eels were confusing to him, like they were to Aristotle. While Aristotle thought eels came straight from the mud, Pliny the Elder believed eels rubbed themselves against rocks, and that when they did that, little bits of the eel would scrape off, and that those little bits of the eel became new eels. It kind of sounds like pixie dust in a fairy tale to me. Ancient Egyptians also had wild ideas about eels. They thought that when the sun came up and warmed the water, eels simply sprang to life. All of these ideas fall into a category of ideas called spontaneous generation. You see, a long time ago, some people thought that little creatures like insects could just magically appear out of things like mud or old food. Think about flies appearing on a pile of dog poop or moldy food. They did not have microscopes or other tools to really look closely and understand all of the tiny things that God has created. So they came up with the idea that these creatures simply sprang to life out of nothing with no mom or dad. This idea was called spontaneous generation. But later, scientists discovered that animals always come from other animals. Baby animals come from parents, not from nowhere. This question about how baby eels are born, or even if there were baby eels, kept scientists searching for over 1,000 years. Scientists even dissected or cut apart hundreds of eels, looking to see if they could figure out whether an eel was a male, a boy, or a female, a girl. Rewards of a lot of money were offered to anyone who could solve this puzzle and find an eel with female or male parts in its body. A couple of eels were found, which seemed promising. Maybe this was a female, but it was hard to tell. Finally, in the year 1777, an eel was found with female parts and even with eggs in her body. This was over 2,000 years since Aristotle had first studied eels. There was another big breakthrough in the great eel question in the 1890s. A scientist named C.G. Peterson observed an eel turning into a different kind of eel. He watched something called a yellow eel transform into something called a silver eel. Until that time, many people had thought that yellow eels and silver eels were different kinds of animals. Now they understood that an eel goes through metamorphosis. Metamorphosis means an animal goes through a big transformation or change from its baby form to its adult form. Think about a caterpillar growing and changing into a butterfly, or a tadpole growing and changing into a toad or a frog. That is metamorphosis, and eels go through very big changes while they grow up. Peterson observed that when a yellow eel grows into a silver eel, its digestive system, so the system inside its body that helps it eat, shuts down. It no longer needs to eat, and its reproductive organs begin to form. Reproductive organs are the special parts inside an animal and people that allow them to have babies. This is the main reason so many scientists had not been able to figure out how eels have babies or if they are male or female, because the eel's reproductive organs don't form until later in their life when they grow into a silver eel. After 2,000 years of studying eels, scientists now understood that there are male and female eels, and that the female has eggs which hatch into tiny baby eels. They also understood that eels go through metamorphosis, or big changes, as they grow up. Along with Peterson's discovery of a yellow eel growing into a silver eel, other scientists had pieced together more parts of this puzzle. Two Italian researchers witnessed a tiny larva, so the baby stage of some type of creature that looked like a see-through leaf floating on the water. They watched it transform into a tiny glass eel in their aquarium. What they saw was the first metamorphosis of the eel from its baby stage, called a leptocephalus, to its child stage as a glass eel. This was the first time that someone had seen this happen, and they realized that it was the first stage of growth for an eel. Through all of these different observations and discoveries, scientists learned that eels grow up in the following way. They begin as leptocephalus. Leptocephalus are see-through baby eels. They look kind of like tiny flat ribbons or leaves that drift in the ocean before they grow up. They then grow into glass eels. Glass eels are young eels that are still see-through, like glass. They then grow into yellow eels. Yellow eels are eels that have turned yellow-brown as they grow bigger. They're finely looking eel-like. Finally, they grow into silver eels. Silver eels are grown-up eels with shiny, silver-colored skin that are ready to have babies. So it seemed like the mystery had been solved. They had their answer to the great eel question. But sometimes in nature study, when we find an answer, it ignites our curiosity, which can lead to more questions. Scientists had discovered baby leptocephalus, juvenile glass eels, yellow eels, and adult silver eels in very different areas of the world and different habitats. So where exactly did it all begin? Like a yellow eel transforming into a silver eel, the great eel question grew into a new question. Where are baby eels born? Where do they come from in the world? Scientists had seen leptocephalus, or baby eels, near the shore. But where did those baby eels come from? One man in particular set out to find an answer. Johannes Schmidt was a marine biologist from Denmark. Between the years of 1904 to 1911, Johannes sailed up and down the coasts of Europe searching for baby eels. He found many, but they were all rather large, for baby eels, that is. They were around the length of a crayon. After 7 years of sailing and searching, he had not gotten very far. He figured that because the baby eels he discovered near the European coast were quite large for babies, they must not hatch in that area. If they did, he would have found much tinier, newly hatched baby eels. He thought he'd have a better chance at finding newly hatched eels further out at sea. But there was a problem. His ship was not very seaworthy, not for that far out at sea, anyways. He did not have a ship or the equipment needed for a venture of this magnitude. So he asked some people who did have those ships and equipment. Who was that? It was Danish ship companies sailing the Atlantic Ocean. From the years 1911 to 1914, 23 Danish ships helped Johannes Schmidt search the ocean for tiny eel larvae. As these ships went about their normal voyages, they drug nets behind them. They would send what they caught in the nets to Johannes so he could search the catches for eel larvae. Over those 4 years, over 500 catches were netted and sent to Johannes, who carefully searched them for larvae. What he discovered was that the further west the ships were, the smaller the eel larvae were. In May of 1914, he found eel larvae that were only 0.3 inches long. That is shorter than a grain of rice. They must be getting close to where eels hatch. But then the search came to a halt because of World War II. With submarines patrolling under the waters, it was no longer safe to go out and look for baby eels. Can you imagine being that close to solving a mystery that scientists had been looking for the answer to for over 2,000 years and having to stop the search? Schmidt spent the next several years studying all of the eel larvae that the shipmen had caught and preparing to set sail again as soon as it was safe. The all clear came in the year 1920, and Schmidt set out for the sea. In the years 1920 and 1921, they caught so many eel larvae that were so very tiny that there was no doubt this is where they had hatched. The area in which Schmidt found newly hatched eel larvae is what we today call the Sargasso Sea. The Sargasso Sea is a very unique area in the ocean. It's unique among seas in that it does not have shores or beaches. It is a sea nestled in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Its barriers, kind of like walls, are made of ocean currents. The Sargasso Sea has lots of floating seaweed called sargassum. This seaweed makes a cozy home for lots of sea creatures, like baby eels, tiny fish, and even little crabs. The Sargasso Sea is warm and has calm water, so it's a safe place for animals to grow up. It's kind of like a big floating garden in the middle of the ocean. Another thing that makes the Sargasso Sea so special is that it is where baby eels hatch. And as far as we know, it's the only place where they hatch. Here's a quick look at an eel's life. Eels start as those tiny see-through babies, those leptocephalus that we learned about, that hatch in the warm Sargasso Sea. They drift across the ocean like tiny ribbons riding on the currents. As they grow, they turn into see-through glass eels. They eventually reach ocean shores, either in North America or Europe, depending on the species. This journey of drifting on ocean currents, it can take up to 3 years as the baby eels drift for thousands of miles. Can you imagine riding on, say, an inner tube on a lazy river ride for thousands of miles over 3 years with no control over where you are going? Next, the glass eels swim into rivers and lakes, becoming yellow eels. This means that they change from living in salty ocean waters to living in fresh water. As they travel across waterways, they can even come up on land and travel across the land out of water for hours. After all that travel, over thousands of miles and a few years, they one day decide that it's time to stop and settle in. They remain in the same area, not traveling very far at all, for 15, 20, or even 30 years. When they are ready to have babies, they turn into silver eels with their shiny skin, and those silver eels swim all the way back to the Sargasso Sea, going from freshwater back to saltwater. They travel back to the Sargasso Sea to lay eggs and start the cycle all over again. While scientists have discovered some things about eels over the past 2,000 years or so, there are still so many mysteries. Here is what we still do not know. We don't know why eels hatch in the Sargasso Sea, or what makes them stop traveling and settle in fresh water. We don't know why they one day decide that it's time to go back to the Sargasso Sea to have babies, or why, or how, they find their way back to the Sargasso Sea. You know, there's lots of theories or ideas around the eel, but the eel remains a great mystery, And although the great eel question has been solved when it comes to laying eggs and hatching in the Sargasso Sea, there are still many unanswered questions when it comes to these curious creatures. Do you remember where Aristotle believed eels come from? He thought they came from the mud. We learned that this idea of something living simply popping up from nothing is called spontaneous generation. Aristotle did not quite have it right, but he was onto something, because eels did originally come from nothing, except for God's word. Hebrews 11:3 says, "By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible." Let me ask you a question. When you want to create a cake, do you simply say, "Let there be a cake"? If you said that, would a delicious cake appear on your countertop? As much as we wish it would, cakes don't just appear that way. Instead, we need to mix the right ingredients and bake it in the oven. What about when you want to create a painting? Do you say, "Let there be a beautiful painting of a mountain with a river running through and a meadow with wildflowers and a deer next to a tree"? And does it simply appear? No. You need to get paper or canvas, paintbrushes, select your colors, and carefully paint the scene. When we create anything, we use tools and materials or ingredients. We use things that already exist. But when God created the universe and everything in it, He made everything simply by His word. His word is incredibly powerful. There is a term in theology, or the study of God and the Bible, that means creating from nothing. It is the word ex nihilo. Can you say that? Ex nihilo. Ex nihilo means God created everything from nothing. What I find very interesting is that science has a similar term. It is de novo. When scientists say something happens de novo, they mean it didn't come from something else. It was made completely new, like drawing a picture from a blank page instead of copying one. It sounds to me like they're talking about God's designs and God making everything from nothing. You might also know that God made the first human, Adam, from the dirt on the ground and God's own breath. And then God made the second human, Eve, from Adam's body. In these cases, God used things that He'd already spoken into place to make more things. God is a very powerful creator. And when God spoke creatures and humans into place, He designed them in a way that they can make more of their own kind. About the creatures, God said in Genesis 1:24, "Let the earth be filled with animals, each producing more of its own kind. Let there be tame animals and small crawling animals and wild animals, and let each produce more of its kind." And it happened. And about the humans, God said in Genesis 1:28, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground." So, did eels come from the mud? No. God spoke them into place by the power of His word, and He designed them to be able to make more baby eels so that the waters, both the salty seawater and the freshwater rivers and lakes, can be full of these amazing creatures. God truly is a wonderful and powerful creator. It's time now to answer a question from one of our listeners. Here is today's question.
Hi, my name is Charlie. I live in the state of Kentucky and I'm 6 years old. I want to know why moray eels have two sets of jaws.
That is a great question, Charlie. Why do moray eels have two sets of jaws? Moray eels are a type of true eel, although they are a different species from the American eels and European eels that we learned about today. Moray eels have a normal set of jaws that are like ours. This primary set of oral jaws is used for grabbing and biting food. The second set of jaws are called pharyngeal jaws. This second set of jaws is located in the back of the moray eel's throat. They can extend, kind of like reach forward to grab prey and pull it down into the eel's throat, helping the eel to swallow its food. So the moray eels use its first set of oral jaws to grab the prey, and the second set of pharyngeal jaws to finish the job and pull the prey deep into their throat for swallowing. Thanks for your great question, Charlie. Stay curious about God's wild and wonderful world. Nat Theo Club members, make sure at the end of this lesson to click over to the bonus video where you will learn how to become a science researcher and make your own projects by drawing a map and taking notes, and hear the story of a research project that my kids and I did in nature. You can find that bonus video in your Nat Theo Club dashboard or at the link in our show notes. Now it's time to answer our trivia question. How many years does an eel live for in the wild? Many eels live for around 15 to 30 years in the wild, although they can live longer. Remember that most of those years are spent in freshwater before returning to the Sargasso Sea to breed. And some eels have been known to live for 50 years, or possibly even 80 years in captivity. That is a long-lived eel. Now it's your turn to explore. Learn about creatures' metamorphosis. Today we discovered how eels grow from baby leptocephalus to glass eels to yellow eels to silver eels. Learn about another metamorphosis in nature. You could press play on another Nat Theo lesson, such as episode 10, to learn how caterpillars grow into butterflies, or lesson 78, to learn how tadpoles grow into toads. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode on true eels, please take a moment to share it with a friend and subscribe, rate, and review Nat Theo wherever you listen. Until next time, keep exploring God's wild and wonderful world. We are all looking.